This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The North Carolina primary is next Tuesday, and this week several presidential candidates, I think all of them or their surrogates, were in town stumping for votes. Aside from candidates, there are bonds on the ballot. We'll fill you in on them. NCDOT went to Texas to learn more about the toll road bankruptcy there and what impact it may have on a road being built here by the same company. And the legislature is threatening to get involved in trying to overturn Charlotte's recently passed LGBTQ ordinance. Now, those and other stories will be the focus of our weekly local news roundup this hour. WFAE's Tom Bullock is here along with Nick Oxner, investigative reporter for WBTV News. His first time here. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, Tom. Good to see you. we're also joined by Eric with a K, Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, and Eric with a C, Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So all the headliners in this year's presidential campaign have been in Charlotte in recent days, including Hillary Clinton's supporter-in-chief, Bill. We keep hearing about how important Ohio and Florida are to what comes next in this campaign. So tell us how important North Carolina remains. Are we or aren't we?
Boy, that is a great question to start this off on, because right now we're both. Quite honestly, you know, the legislature moved up the primary to try to make sure that North Carolina was more relevant, was more important, and frankly got more attention from both Democrats and Republicans that were seeking their party's nomination for president. And what we've ended up with in this very, very interesting campaigning year, let's just call it that, is on the Democrat side, you notice that yesterday Hillary Clinton was in Raleigh. Today, Bernie Sanders will be in Raleigh as well. But really, all the attention is going to these other two states that if you go back, most of the elections, presidential elections,
right,
at least this century, have been the ones that have decided the fate of the White House. And that's the trick. We are now paired with Ohio and Florida, and both of those two states are winner-take-all when it comes to the delegates. North Carolina is not. It's one of the last states that will, you know, divvy them up according to how well you do.
Well, it's not only that, it's the fact that Florida and Ohio are worth a lot more anyway.
Yeah.
So we have that. It's been a quite surreal week, I think would be fair to say, particularly starting with a doubleheader of Trump, get him out of here, and then Bill Clinton, who was a little more reserved than normal as he stood outside Johnson C. Smith University, and then, of course, Ted Cruz started the first of his two appearances in Kannapolis. And the saddest note of the week politically, Mike, is that Chuck Norris apparently is not going to be with Ted Cruz on Sunday at the Speedway, so we'll have to live without him.
You mentioned that Bill Clinton was at Johnson C. Smith, but Hillary was in the Triangle yesterday.
Correct.
And Bernie Sanders, you said, is in Raleigh today.
Today.
Why aren't they coming here? Biggest city in the state. Why aren't they coming here?
That's a good question. I've actually wondered that, too. And the best I can kind of come up with is that they, a lot of these candidates, they want to appeal. Well, I guess there's a thought that you know how Mecklenburg County is going to vote. But
no need to come here?
Yeah, but you don't necessarily know what the suburbs are going to do. So you go to the suburbs just outside of Mecklenburg County. You saw stops in Kannapolis, in Concord. You still get the media market of Mecklenburg, but you're pointing your main...
Well, Eric, that's true for the Republicans. But on the Democrat side, I think it's a slightly different issue. I think it's optics. I think it's who you want in the crowd. Because
if
you
true.
Look at it, you know, with Hillary Clinton, who is still far and away leading in the delegate count, and Bernie Sanders, who had a huge win, a real upset win in Michigan last Tuesday, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters tend to be young. They tend to be college kids. They tend to be, you know, people that, frankly, Raleigh has a higher concentration of.
Are you saying that bankers wouldn't come out in droves for Bernie Sanders?
I'll leave that to my business journal.
Bankers for Bernie.
Doesn't Hillary want her Wall Street friends to come out? Bernie Sanders, as you said, does very well with young voters, and Hillary Clinton does very well with black voters. Do we anticipate the same thing happening in North Carolina next year?
Yeah. I think the last Hillary Clinton commercial that I saw, I don't know if there was a white person in that commercial other than Hillary.
Wow.
She's really hammering right. hard, basically, you know, trying to tell the African-American vote in North Carolina voter that I want you.
There was a Civitas poll of 500 Democrats and 500 Republicans in the state last week that revealed that Clinton was leading Sanders 57 to 28%, while Trump was leading the GOP field with 32% to Ted Cruz's 26% and then 11% each for Rubio and Kasich. Now, the polls this year have not always been accurate.
Michigan.
You think that's exactly right. You think these numbers are accurate?
No, I think that Ted Cruz really thinks he can make a play in this state. And the reason I think that is because he's gone up on TV and advertising in North Carolina. Mm. And that's another thing when you talk about are we important or aren't we. You can tell we all thought that there would be just a flood of political ads long before this week. I can tell you at WBTV we were thinking we'd have a flood of political ads, right? And they hadn't been. We hadn't seen them. And so they finally arrived. This week, we saw Bernie, Hillary, and Ted Cruz are all up on TV now. And Cruz is really hitting Donald Trump hard. I mean, the first 10 seconds of the ad is Donald Trump's face with how bad of a person he is. And so for Ted Cruz to be investing money in this state, in Charlotte, the most expensive media market in the state, right, tells me that he thinks he can make a play coming back again, two visits. I think he must think that he can knock Trump off.
Yeah, Nick, I think you're right. And it's also interesting because Ted Cruz has the least to either win or lose in this next round of primaries on the Republican side. If you look at it, you know, Ohio, that's where Kasich. Governor John Kasich is governor, and he has to win that to really do well. You've got Florida. That is Marco Rubio's home state, and that will make or break, or I should say keep alive or break, his campaign. You know, you have Illinois, you have Missouri. They're just kind of out there. They're not really one way or another. I mean, Trump is leading in the polls there. He's leading in the polls, I believe, in all of these states. But Ted Cruz, unlike when Texas was up on right. Super Tuesday, he has been freed up because he is not expected to do great in any of these states. He's also not expected to do poorly in any of these states. So he can come to here, North Carolina, and if he pulls up off an upset, it's far bigger news than the fact that he lost Mississippi and Michigan sure. to Donald Trump a week ago.
Speaking of upsets,
or I guess this week.
I mentioned a second ago, ratified it, Eric, that the polls haven't always been right this time around. They got it wrong in the Michigan Democratic primary. Nate Silver, who is editor-in-chief of 538.com, which is a website that really focuses only on elections, said in advance, that if Bernie Sanders were to defeat Hillary there, it would be, and I quote, among the greatest polling errors in primary history. Well, Bernie did beat her.
Yes, sold.
So does she have to worry about him in North Carolina?
Well, I mean, I think that people – I don't think so, but I think people will look at that. And, of course, if Bernie has some surge of momentum, people will immediately say, what in the world is going on with the polls? And you mentioned Nate Silver, who really became, you know, sort of a rock star of analytics because he nailed the election a couple elections ago. He was right across the board. And then he has been wrong every single time with Donald Trump this year. And, of course, he's not alone.
He's the first one to tell you that.
Right, and he's the first one to say it. But that just shows you how difficult this particular election year has been to peg.
Why? In terms of Bernie, is it because it's difficult to talk to millennials because they only have cell phones?
Well, I mean, that could be part of it. I also think that Bernie is, in many ways, as people have said, he's similar to Donald Trump. And so it's hard to find his voters. I don't know whether they don't want to say that they're voting for Bernie or that they are unreachable or a combination, but if you look at all the polling errors this year, it's really been Sanders and Trump on each side.
One of the most common phrases you see in polling is their bread and butter, likely, insert party name here, voter. Those are the people they tend to go for. Where the thing with Donald Trump and the thing with Bernie Sanders, a big thing they have in common here, is that they're getting the people who are not classic
right. yeah,
likely
sure.
voters.
Well, they get a lot of people who don't participate, period.
Yeah. So when Donald Trump says, we're seeing a phenomenon here, we're bringing people into the Republican Party who have never voted. Some of them are 50 years old, 60 years old. They've never voted. He's being true?
That is true. Yeah,
I think that is true. Now, I don't know if the stakes are any good, but I think that's true.
Well, also.
Those stakes are not his stakes.
Oh, no.
The thing I find interesting about that with Trump, that where he says he's bringing in so many new people, that is true. But he's also bringing in people who hate what he stands for. You look at his rallies. How many presidential candidates have, you know, dedicated, zealous protesters showing up, following them around the country pretty yeah. much, to harass his rallies? So, you know, the GOP has to think about that too.
So when we talk about the enthusiasm gap on the Democratic side, maybe we're mischaracterizing it. Maybe all the people who are enthusiastic about about Bernie and Hillary are over there protesting at the Trump rally.
That's who we should survey to figure out how North Carolina is going to go.
Well, the Democrats are suffering from what they call an enthusiasm gap, while Trump is bringing in thousands of new voters to the polls and to his rallies. What do we anticipate happening here? What's early voting been like so far? Do we know?
I haven't seen any specific numbers.
I haven't seen the numbers. I think the participation has been pretty good. I've heard anecdotally a lot of people saying that the lines are pretty long, and so that means a lot of people are turning out.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the legislative moves with the LGBTQ ordinance here in Charlotte and focus in on the I-77 toll lanes. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's our weekly local news roundup with Tom Bullock from WFAE News, Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer, Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal. Just switch jobs.
That's right.
If you like it.
You take the K, I'll take a C, and we'll be here.
And Nick Oxner is here. He's an investigative reporter for WBTV News, and he's been very busy this week. You went to Texas to cover the NCDOT Secretary Nick Tennyson's visit with leaders of the Texas Department of Transportation. Remind us why Governor McCrory requested that Tennyson make that trip.
Well, the request came after a road that's owned and operated by a subsidiary of Cintra, the Spanish company that has the contract to build the I-77 toll lanes. They have a road in Texas, and the subsidiary of theirs in Texas declared bankruptcy this week, which was not unexpected. But it declared bankruptcy last Wednesday, and as a result that night, Pat McCrory came out and said, we got to make sure our contract's protected, so I'm sending my DOT secretary down there to meet with people and see if it's going to affect us.
And you went along, not for the ride, but to also to investigate. As a matter of fact, you and WBTV did an investigation in February into the company in Texas that went bankrupt, and you also looked into Cintra's history of toll road troubles in the country. They have three other roads, right? They have the one in Texas, they have the Chicago Skyway, and the Indiana Toll Road. Cintra, as you said, it's the company that's going to build the toll lanes here on I-77. What is their bankruptcy record?
Well, and so they had the Indiana Toll Road and they had the Chicago Skyway. Both of those have been sold. So really, to put it very frankly, they've had four roads across the United States. Three of them have either been sold right before they declared bankruptcy or now have declared bankruptcy. So two in bankruptcy. The Chicago Skyway was sold right before they were about to default on some debt. And so the other road is in North Texas, the North Tarrant Expressway. Those are lanes like they would build here. And supporters of the lanes have pointed to those saying, look, they're doing just fine. They've only existed for about 18 months. And so we don't know how well they're going to do yet and whether or not they're going to meet projections.
Should it concern us that these other roads were sold just prior to going into bankruptcy? Or is this a situation where, and we talked about this last week, I think, where this is bankruptcy as a business plan?
Well, I definitely – it certainly seems to be that they're not – losing money when they go bankrupt. In fact, if you look at Cintra's parent company is a Spanish firm called Ferrovial, and they're in Spain. But if you look at their annual report, they actually made money. So the Indiana Toll Road declared bankruptcy, and then they sold the road, and they made like $60 million off of it. So, you know, they are making money off of this, but they're declaring bankruptcy because they're not getting the cash flow and the profits and the revenue that they need because no one is driving the road. And that's what should be concerning to drivers. Is that in our story that we did in February, we talked to some experts from the Public Interest Research Group who've done lots of studies on this. And, you know, Cintra and the Federal Highway Administration that authorizes and helps finance these projects are using traffic projections that are about 20 years outdated, that contemplates traffic continuing to increase, and that's just not happening anymore. And so then they have less cars, less revenue, toll rates go up because they need to try to meet their revenue, and then they don't, and then they declare bankruptcy.
It's even worse than that, too. I mean, if you haven't had a chance to see Nick's reporting on this, I really suggest you do. I think he's done a fantastic job.
Your check's in the mail for that.
Yeah, hopefully it is fundraising.
You'll get a mug.
But, you know, it's not just that the number of cars on the roads are going down. It's also that Cintra's estimation of other toll projects, including actually I-77, have been seen as so optimistic that right now Moody's has their bond, their debt, rated at one step above junk. And the way that this is set up is basically a balloon payment. So you remember, Mike, back in the day with all the housing problems, the adjustable arm, you know, mortgage, all that kind of thing. It, in a way, it's like that. And I'm not surprised they're making money off of this. Clearly, they know what they're doing. But you know, I would I'm not going to predict whether or not it would go bankrupt, but I would say this: it has been seen as a business model, as a way to fund it.
Well, we probably don't care whether they go bankrupt. There are a lot of people in Huntersville who would love for them to go bankrupt. But does it impact the drivers of those roads?
Yeah, you should care, and it gets back to so when we were on the Indiana Toll Road, we stopped just at an exit just before you hit the toll road, right? Because we wanted to see if anyone actually drove this thing. Huh? And the people we talked to said, no, I don't drive it. It's too expensive. When you look at the Chicago Skyway, tolls skyrocketed from like, you know, 85 cents. And these aren't exact numbers, but from like 85 cents to $1.85, you know, within a year of Cintra's subsidiary there taking over that road. And so before you get to bankruptcy, you try to increase your revenue by increasing the tolls. And so, you know, that's how
it has an impact. Particularly troubling on a toll lane situation, it would seem to me, because if, as you say, higher tolls mean fewer drivers. So if people don't use the lanes, they're in the other lanes that are free.
Right.
And highly congested already, and they'll be more congested because the other two lanes, the toll lanes, will be empty.
And by contract, the state can't build additional infrastructure that's free.
For 50 years. Right. And in addition to that, there's also this simple fact about bankruptcy. Things like, say, deferred maintenance become the norm because you're not supposed to be spending a whole bunch of capital on hand to improve something that you may or may not be able to keep. So in bankruptcy, there is, I believe this is happening, I think it happened with the Indiana road and may happen with the Texas road, that you really start seeing, you know, the maintenance, the basic keeping of the potholes down
The Cintra guys definitely know that they've got a problem here. Earlier this week, the U.S. president of Cintra, Nicholas Rubio, I think his name is, he came to Charlotte and he came and spoke with the editorial board at the Observer.
Yeah,
I
was going to say, it's like we had an exchange of hostages. We sent Nick Tennyson to Austin and then they sent their guy
basically.
Here.
Basically. Yeah, and his main message to us seemed to be, if I had to boil it all down, was basically, we are not crooks. And Nick Tennyson, who came and talked to us about a week or two earlier, his main message was, I'm not an idiot. So they all are on the ropes and they're just looking for a way out of this.
Last time somebody told us we are not a crook, we had Watergate. So this is Tollgate.
basically.
Little pun there. Cintra is located, their headquarters is in Austin.
Yes.
You were in Austin. You tried to speak to somebody from Cintra and the end result was?
Well, we spent about an hour in their lobby. It's very nice. It's just been renovated, I'm told. And we talked to no one. And it's interesting. You know, we've done a series of stories. Every time we do, we request comment from Cintra and from their local people and their people in Austin. Oftentimes, we get ignored to the last minute and we get a blanket statement. And then we hear them complain that we're not being fair, that our stories are one-sided. So we thought, while we're in town, let's stop by. I told them we were coming to town, had received no response back from them in, you know, to our multiple emails before we got there. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, let's stop by and see if they want to talk. And what they did, they sent a secretary down who, poor lady, you know, gets the mic in her face and the camera and she says, I'm just a secretary, you know,
they're making money because they still have secretaries.
That's right. And the result was, you know, the camera made her say real quickly, let me go get someone else. So we sit and wait. And instead of someone else coming down, I got an email from a vice president who said, we're not going to talk to you today.
I think the other piece that we're sort of glossing over or not covering here is the fact that this whole phenomenon is a result of political leaders wanting to find a way out of raising gas taxes or other taxes to pay for roads. And so this is your classic, we'll go to the private sector and see whether it works. And so obviously you have a mixed record here, and it's interesting. The Cintra executive, all he kept saying was, well, if we charge too much for the tolls, people won't use them. We can't pay back our money. But then you look at some of these other circumstances, and obviously people say, well, wait a minute, you didn't pay back your money in Indiana and in Texas. And, of course, now they have some projects in North Texas that they say are very successful.
Now they're so young, you don't know.
Right.
When they sell these toll roads, are the contracts that they've entered into with the other municipalities, do they transfer with the road?
Yes.
Yeah, so when like on the Indiana toll road, after they declared bankruptcy, they sold the rights to toll the road to another investor. And so in Texas, now this is interesting. In Texas, TxDOT is telling people that if they declare bankruptcy and go insolvent and can't maintain their road anymore, Texas gets a free road. And so that contract is different than the other
Carolina,
two.
The North Carolina road, it reverts to NCDOT, and then they would go sell it to someone else.
So that's Sintra's sales pitch to these local government officials. If we can't make this thing work financially, it's a
no risk for you because we are responsible for the debt. Now, when you start to peel back, you get into all these circumstances, such as the federal transportation loans, where you can defer the interest.
Right.
What
right.
Tom is talking
the
about,
TIFA.
Like
TIFIA, sorry,
TIFIA like when you have a house payment, a balloon payment later on down the road. And so that is some of the concern that you'll see from the ratings agencies is, well, wait a minute, this might give them flexibility early, but then what do they do in later years if they don't meet their target traffic?
So Nick Tennyson, the North Carolina Department of Transportation Secretary, was dispatched to Texas to talk to the Texas highway officials by the governor. What has he said about that meeting or about the toll road and the future of the toll lanes here in Charlotte?
Very little. He came out of that meeting, made about a 30-second statement. I tried to ask him a question. He said no and got in his car and left. And so we don't know. We really don't. And that's not me being flippant.
But he has said that the Texas bankruptcy is no basis for canceling the I-77.
And here's a key point is that Sintra, this investment company, they have the majority ownership in these roads that we're talking about, including I-77. But all of these are standalone companies so that if something goes wrong financially, that one company is responsible, but Sintra is not, and it doesn't affect the other projects.
It's the real estate development model. And Rubio, the
that's
US
how
he described it that way.
But, you know, it's interesting that the governor's talking point on this has evolved a little bit. Last Wednesday, it said, we're going to evaluate their business model to see if their business model makes sense for North Carolina. The next day, we said, well, we're just going to see if one company has an effect on the other company. Of course, the answer there is no. And so, we were evaluating their business model. The next day, we were evaluating nothing.
If, correct me if I'm wrong, the toll road project in Texas is a product of Rick Perry when he was the governor, the Republican governor of Texas. And now you spoke with a reporter for the nonprofit group Texas Tribune who told you that as a result of this, toll roads have fallen out of favor in the Lone Star State and that Sintra has become a boogeyman there.
Yes.
Why?
Because these projects simply haven't worked. I mean, that's what he told me, Amon Bahia with Texas Tribune. And they have now, I think, 12 roads across the state. And what the Texas Tribune reporter said is, look, people, politicians are just tired of tolls. They're tolled out. That's the words he used. And they suddenly realized Perry thought this was a great way to get private money, ways to pay for roads instead of state money. And so they tried it, and everyone bought in. But it's not worked. People are paying too much money. You have now roads that are going bankrupt, and they've realized it's not a good
I was just going to add real quickly, Mike. What's interesting about that is that Texas is held up as a paragon for toll roads and private road building, and groups like the Charlotte Chamber say often in their support of I-77, we have to do this because we can't compete with states like Texas and Florida for business because we're not doing this.
So did the state not do the due diligence that WBTV just did?
They say that they've been, you know, when Tennyson said, I'm going to Texas to drive the road for the first time, he said that last Friday. I was standing right next to Eric when he said it. He said, I'm going to go drive it for the first time. And, you know, it raises the question, why didn't North Carolina DOT go do this 3 years ago, two years ago, whenever? And they say they've been doing that, but it's a good question.
We've done a number of programs on this I-77 toll road thing. And one of the things that came through loud and clear in the last program that we did, and we did it with opponents, is that they knew more about this, more about the contract, more about Sintra, more about the track record than anybody we talk to who is in favor of all of this. You're all reporters. Does this thing smell bad to you?
Well, there are a lot of really important questions.
And when I say smell bad, I don't mean does it smell bad as a deal. Is there something going on under the surface? Is money changing hands somewhere that we don't know about, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm going to roll that back a bit. I don't think any of us here are in a position to be able to talk about what you're saying, Mike, is you're wondering if there's corruption involved.
Yeah,
I don't think
any of us. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I don't think any of us here are in a position, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong, to say whether it is or not. That's the kind of thing that sometimes you find out about, sometimes you don't. What I will say, though, is this. I'm not surprised that opponents are much more familiar with the contract, because they have reason to pour through it to look for the problems. The people who have been supporting it have a very simple thing. They like the concept. Mm-hmm. And at one point, this was described as the bright and shiny future of American transportation systems at a time our infrastructure was crumbling.
Well, and I think the other thing is that when you hear from people who support this is what they're going to say is, look, there is not nearly enough money to fund the transportation and infrastructure needs that we have out there. You're losing time for business and shipping and all these things. If you don't do this, what else are you going to do? Are you just going to sit in traffic? Are you just going to complain? You have to make a decision and you have to do something. This is the best alternative we can come up with. Now, again, I'm not advocating that, but I'm saying there are two clear sides to this, so you can understand how they got to that point.
When we come back on our local news round, we'll do the lightning round. We'll talk about the LGBTQ ordinances and the legislature's probable involvement in all of this.
What is local controversy?
That's a bond, sales tax expansion, and more at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local weekly news roundup with Tom Bullock from WFAE News. Nick Oxner, I can't say your name, Nick, I'm sorry. Investigative reporter from WBTV News. Eric Frazier from the Charlotte Observer, the editorial writer there. And Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal. We've all talked about the LGBTQ ordinance that the city passed a few weeks ago. And now Senate Pro Tem... President Pro Tem Phil Berger has named a group of 10 senators as well as Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest to work with House lawmakers to examine ways to overturn this ordinance. Why is that necessary? Doesn't the legislature already have the power to tell cities around the area what they can and cannot do?
Because it's an election year, and this is a great issue for the Republic.
Well, both sides,
yes.
Really. It's red meat for everybody.
The floor. I cede the floor. He has answered it expertly.
Well, you say it's a great issue for both sides. We've heard a lot in this campaign about New York values, and this is now being called Charlotte values being out of sync with the rest of the state. That criticism obviously coming from Republicans. Is that going to resound around the state, or will it kill them here?
Not in the cities, it won't.
The governor already has problems.
Right. It's not going to resound in the large cities. Now, I think it will resound in some of the suburbs and certainly in some of your more rural areas. This is the classic political standoff, I think, and that's why it is such a ripe issue.
So is this an issue only because of the bathroom aspect of this, where people can use the bathroom of the gender with which they identify?
I think,
or is it the whole thing?
I think that the bathroom is the focal point and allows both sides to sort of seize on the righteous indignation, depending on
the bathroom. Bathroom is the catchphrase.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody is complaining about the fact that this ordinance expands the same protections to people based on their family status.
Right.
You know, everybody is looking past all those other things. It is the catchphrase that is a cornerstone issue for the political base on both the left and the right.
So the other political part of this is the fact that Republican lawmakers have blasted Attorney General, the Democratic Attorney General, Roy Cooper.
I wonder why they did that.
Not acting to overturn. Well, he's running for governor.
Oh, that's right. I knew there was a reason, Mike.
Can that be used effectively against him in his campaign?
Oh, absolutely.
It'll help them in the rural areas. It should help Governor McCrory turn out his base, you know, who see this as Charlotte values, New York values, whatever you want
to call
it.
And why has Roy Cooper not stepped in and said something? Does he believe the governor on television said he thinks this is a legal ordinance?
I think Cooper is trying to sort of calibrate his response so that he does not, you know, inflame the rural areas that he, frankly, also feels like he has a chance to bring those people into the Democratic column. So he's trying to kind of walk down the middle on it.
Yeah, I think Cooper is emerging as your classic centrist North Carolina Democratic candidate.
Yeah.
And so that's why he is taking the position.
Well, Governor McCrory, who is the long-term mayor here, has told Tim Boyum on Capitol Tonight on Time Warner cable news that he thought the ordinance is probably legal, but that it's just wrong for North Carolina. If you have the Republican governor saying it's legal, how can the legislature step in and overturn
well,
the legal?
Well, remember, they're not saying that it's not everyone is saying that it's illegal. They're saying that it shouldn't be done, that it's bad mm-hmm. policy. Mm-hmm. So they can certainly step in because they still have ultimate authority on what all cities and towns do.
Okay. The ordinance takes effect on April the 1st. The legislature could be moving toward a special session to deal with this issue on April the 25th. How likely is that
well,
to happen?
That's the regular session date. They would have to move up for a special session sooner.
Okay.
I think we're all still waiting to see. I mean, I thought it was interesting. Tim Moore came out very quickly, said, you know, I've got 3/5 of the House who's willing to sign on for a special session. The governor said he's not going to call a special session. The other way it can happen is if, you know, if that 3/5 of the House and Senate both sign on. So Tim Moore gets the ball rolling. Senator Berger is like, meh, and then all of a sudden he names these 10 senators to start kind of looking at it and working on it. Either way, either whether a special session is launched or not, you're going to see this issue be one of the first bills introduced in the General
right.
Assembly.
Yeah. And this is an issue that everyone can latch onto. The public can quickly mm-hmm. take a side.
Meanwhile, the president of the Charlotte LGBT Chamber of Commerce, Chad Severance Turner, resigned this week after coming under fire from a conservative group which pointed out that he is on a sex offender list for a conviction in 1998 for a lewd act upon a child under 16. At the time, Turner was 20. Does his resignation from a group that supported this ordinance neuter any fallout, or does this new revelation give fuel to the other
well,
side?
Well, the GOP has already, the state, I think, GOP has already put out media releases trumpeting this fact.
And you've so had the Values Coalition, which actually I think kind of got this started. I think that is a pretty severe problem for backers of this ordinance because all the details and nuance are going to get lost, and basically it's going to be the headline of LGBT leader has this history. Oh, my God, why are we letting this happen? I think that's what the fear is.
There's some confusion here because LGBT people will say that transgendered people are not gay people.
And, but Mike, again, and this that's true, but
this conviction, though, is for a 20-year-old man allegedly fondling a 16-year-old boy while he slept. Men using the women's room to be.
I fully understand, okay, and you're correct. Factually, all those things are true. What I'm saying is that people won't listen. They won't hear that. They'll just hear LGBT episode, and they'll think, why is this happening? Why is this going to be, you know, a problem across the state?
I think we've already started going down that road, the conservatives. I mean, that's all they're painting this as, and it's, for better or for worse, it's an effective headline when you start talking about who gets the momentum.
It's very difficult to fight.
Well, then listen up, people. Listen to this. Because now we got to talk about the bonds, and nobody knows about the bonds. I think until Chancellor Phil Dubois from UNC Charlotte and Tony Zeiss, the president of CPCC, started stumping this week for the bonds on next Tuesday's ballot, not many people were paying attention to that there were bonds on the ballot, but there are $2 billion worth of bonds on the ballot, allowing the state to borrow that money for lots of government projects, including new buildings for the UNC system and for CPCC. What other kinds of projects are on the bonds?
It is pretty much everything except roads,
which I wanted to mention up front,
is that it was called Connect North Carolina. It was originally a $3 billion package, and half of it was dedicated to roads, and half was dedicated to universities and these other projects. And the legislature said, Governor, we don't think so. And so the roads piece went away, and that's how we wound up with the $2 billion.
Yes, Connect NC with no connections in it. It really was fascinating.
It's metaphorical.
What's funny is that they have, I think, according to McCrory, they have $4 billion worth of bonding capacity that they can do without increasing taxes. They could have easily put those roads into that, but they decided not to. Maybe a toll road?
But isn't that because all future major road projects will be toll road projects in the state? Isn't that
the plan? That's not exactly right. In a general sense, that's true, but there were more specific reasons why this didn't get in there.
So, since none of you answered my question, let me answer my question. What kinds of projects? 2/3 goes to the new buildings or repairs at all UNC systems and community college campuses. The rest to local government water and sewer projects, money for parks, the NC Zoo, the National Guard, and the Department of agriculture. And these bonds are getting bipartisan support. Both the governor and the former lieutenant governor, Walter Dalton, that McCrory ran against in the last election, are pushing for yes votes on the bonds.
Well, and you look, they've raised a ton of money, too, Mike, for their campaign. So,
do we generally say yes? Do citizens generally say yes in North Carolina to bonds?
Well, the last time we had a bond package, it was $3 billion in 2000, and I think it was 73% supported. So at least the most recent one, it passed and passed pretty easily.
Well, and who wants to say, no, I don't want, you know, nicer parks or a better building at my child's university or, you know, they've...
Oh, a lot of people would say that.
They've cobbled together, you know, I think things that smartly that people generally can support, that can get behind. And, you know, I think that from the perspective of the bipartisan folks who are supporting this, it's an issue that, you know, can't lose.
And remember, the pitch is if you vote for this, taxes will not go up. That's always an important provision when we're
promoting. So let me get back to something I think that you were alluding to a second ago, Eric Spanberg. A liberal group, Progress NC Action, has accused Pat McCrory's campaign of coordinating to promote these bonds with the Connect NC Committee and another entity supporting the bonds. Oh, that's a kind of commingling of campaign funds.
Right, exactly.
Would that be illegal or unethical or what?
Well, it could be, but so far, that basically we have a charge and we have nothing else attached. And,
well, we're waiting on a ruling from the Board of Elections, and it's actually probably going to now come after the bond, after Tuesday's vote. But both the McCrory campaign and the Connect NC folks have responded and said this is just a bunch of political maneuvering.
And what that kind of tells me is that's how popular – in theory, these bonds are that Governor McCrory's opponents are trying to get him to back away and not let his campaign be commingled too closely with these bonds because they feel like he'll get a political advantage.
Not get credit for having these bonds.
Credit.
Very quickly, is there significant opposition to these bonds?
No,
there's scattered opposition, but it's not significant.
Let's move on to sales taxes. Earlier this month, sales taxes began to be levied in North Carolina on repair, maintenance, and installation services. Have consumers noticed?
Some of the small businesses certainly have. I think a press release went out a couple days ago from the North Carolina chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, basically saying that these sales taxes are a bad idea, they're being badly implemented, and that the legislature needs to slow down, take a beat, and reconfigure.
And you had the legislative staff saying there are some inconsistencies that need to be worked out.
Some pretty significant ones. I mean, the trick with this is I think we just said that the LGBT issue is likely to be one of the first bills introduced in the General Assembly. I think this fix is likely to be the second bill introduced in because...
What's the problem with them?
Well, it matters on who's doing the services. I mean,
if you're a retail business, if you're defined as a retail business or not, it was a plumbing.
Yeah, the example that they used when they were briefing actually lawmakers, it was if you're getting your sink or your, you know, something in your bathroom repaired by a plumbing supply services firm, you know, somebody who also sells you the pipe, but it will send a guy over to get it done. Just like
so if you go to Lowe's or Home Depot and you order. An appliance that has to be connected to your plumbing and the plumbing has to be altered, you would pay sales tax on that from them. But if you call Joe the plumber, who's a Republican, by the way.
Yes, in Ohio. It'd be a long trip for him.
Now, that is a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Then you wouldn't have to pay sales tax on it. Is that right?
Well, that's exactly right, and that's the problem. It does, in fact, create this uneven playing field that Republicans always hate to say, you know, they always love to say that's exactly what we don't want to do, but that is what has happened.
Okay.
And it's kind of a pattern that you've seen with the legislature with all these tax changes that they've been making. They make them kind of, you know, they want to get it done, it done fast, and then they have to come back and figure out all the unintended consequences.
Why? That's what blew up the airport authority here. Remember that?
Right.
Because there were problems with the idea of a separate authority in terms of the way the bill was written, and so that's why they went to the committee that, of course, has never really gotten very far either.
Okay, and that's obviously a pattern that.
Yeah, it's like Chris Farley banging the gavel, you know. approved.
All right, we only have 30 seconds left. I was going to talk about Charlotte rentals. We have all these rental units going up, and yet rents continue to rise, which seems to go against supply and demand rules.
That's the ultimate tease for next week, isn't it, Mike?
Well, we could come back next Friday and talk about that with Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer, Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, Nick Oxner, investigative reporter for WBTV News, and Tom Bullock, reporter for WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.